This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. This episode marks the beginning of a special experimentation sub-series of episodes. We're going to be doing a serialization of the audiobook of Expect More by Dr. David Lankus, which will be available later from audible.com as a complete package. This first episode in the series features a chat with David and I about the creation of the audiobook, and also the introduction and chapter one. Episodes will continue every other week, and that'll get us into December. And also keep an eye out on your RSS feed for regular episodes of the podcast once a month through the end of the year. I hope you enjoy our experiment and learn a little something along the way. All right, well, David, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you decided recently that you wanted to do an audiobook version of your previous book, Expect More.
Correct.
So what was the idea that you came up with to get this all kicked off?
Well, I'm really interested in publishing and of all types. And as an academic, I've done the sort of give away your intellectual property to a journal so they can, you know, force your library to buy it back. I've had great success with some great publishers like MIT Press and ACRL on the Atlas for New Librarianship. But Expect More was my first foray into self-publishing. And actually, I think it was very successful on a couple of reasons. One, it sold over 2,000 copies, which for an academic runs pretty reasonable. Mm-hmm. And it gave me the experience of going through full publishing. I mean, back in my sort of undergraduate days, I'd worked in a ad agency. So I loved the getting in and typesetting and all that, what I think others might find boring. But the other great advantage I had is that I still own the intellectual property and could sort of do with it as I pleased. And so this past spring, I decided that, you know, the mission here is not necessarily me making a lot of money, but getting the message out and giving librarians the tools they need. And so I made the ebook a freely available download for anyone. And I'm still thinking about, well, how do you experiment? So we tried, you know, putting it up in a site called Medium. I just put it up in one called Noise Tracker. It's one of those, I have a substantial text and I can try out different venues. And it just sort of occurred to me, and I don't know why, it must be complete self-absorbed arrogance on my part, that an audio book, I mean, would be interesting. I mean, I'm going to be texting this out at, you know, 140 characters, but before too long. But so I wanted to try an audio book just because I'm really interested in the recording aspects and what's there and echo and all this kind of stuff. And so the idea is, let's make an audio book. And I was sort of put this out to the world, and they said, well, it'd be really interesting if you wanted to sort of serialize it as a podcast, you know, a chapter every other week or so. And I said, that is a great idea. However, me having a podcast is not a great idea because I have good friends that make it very clear this is not an easy thing to do. So let me just make their life harder. And I thought, you're welcome. I thought Circulating Ideas would be a perfect place because you're reaching the audience. You do a great job. And if you can use it, that's fabulous. I also am going to be working with a group called Nerd Absurd. I've been there, a guest on their podcast. I think it's a smaller podcast, but it's geared towards non-librarians, which is really the audience for Expect More, right? It's librarians can use this with their communities, or communities can read it. Librarians, hopefully get something out of it themselves, but we tend to point them to the Atlas because it's big and pointy and very sharp. So that's the general idea.
And so is Expect More the movie coming next, or?
I'm waiting for the phone call. I'm hoping that William Hurt will play my part. I would say David Tennant, but let's face it, I'm not English or attractive. So that's kind of out.
And I was going to ask you about, you brought it up, publishing on Medium. I remember when you did that, there were several news stories that came out sort of around that you were kind of the first person to put a complete book on Medium. What made you think of using Medium?
Once again, it was the crowd. In other words, someone sent in and said, hey, here's a really good, Justin Henke from Chattanooga loves it, and other people said this would be a great place, and I was willing to experiment. I love the idea that people can go and comment line by line. I think three people have, but And it's funny because when I put it up there, yes, there was a nice little coverage of here's a full book on Medium. And I got a few little responses going, that's crap. Medium's supposed to be about short and, you know, little essays, and you put this whole book on. And it's like, oh, cope. So,
but I mean, I've read long form essays on there before, so it's not just short thing. And short things are for Tumblrs.
Right. Oh, there you go. And no, there will not be a Tumblr. No.
You can do the entire book in animated GIFs.
That's right. So
or GIFs, whichever one it is, I forget.
It's GIFs. I know even the inventor says it's supposed to be GIFs, but it's GIFs. I'm sorry. but the, you know, one of the fun thing is, you know, we're going to do this sort of episodic. Here's every 2 weeks. And then at the end, compile it and make it available via audible.com. Once again, just sort of figuring out and playing with these different distribution mechanisms. But yeah, and I've also have another book, a non-library book that I'm looking to come out. And so I just want to play with all these different ways of doing it.
Yeah. So this has sort of become your experimental book.
It is. It used to be my dissertation. My dissertation, you know, because no one wants to read it, is not on Medium. But I used to, as I got new gadgets and, you know, I'd go from my Palm Pilot to way back when to, you know, and then it was an Apple and then an iPad. And I would just always take the text file and see if I could keep it up to date. And so now it's become expect more to see, you know, where I can push it and what it can do, what it can't do.
Well, that's very cool. So if people want to keep listening to this episode, you'll hear the introduction, and then in the show notes I'll include a link to the previous episode that we did about this, because that you'll notice that we aren't talking about the content of this. That's because we did a whole hour a couple years ago about that, so we'll link up to that.
Yes, no one needs to hear that anymore, so.
All right, well, hope everybody enjoys listening, and David, thanks for doing this for everybody.
Oh, thank you, Steve, for doing this for everybody as well.
All right, bye-bye.
Expect More, Demanding Better Libraries for Today's Complex World, written by R. David Lankus and read by the author. This book is dedicated to my wife, Anna Maria. You have been patient as I have written, traveled, and struggled. You have been rightly impatient when I have ignored things that were much more important, like the boys, you, and enjoying life. Through all things, you have shown the most amazing ability to tether me to reality and inspire me to reach for the stars. 1. The Arab Spring. Expect the exceptional. The Arab Spring had come to Egypt in early 2011 on the heels of a successful revolution in Tunisia. Egyptians took to the streets to demand reforms from a government regime that had been in power for nearly 30 years. While much of the media fixated on protesters who occupied Tahrir Square in the Egyptian capital of Cairo, many protests started in the port city of Alexandria. In Alexandria, as in Cairo, people from across generations and the socioeconomic scale rioted to demand liberty, justice, and social equity. In an attempt to restore the Constitution, what was seen primarily as a peaceful uprising led to the deaths of at least 846 people and an additional 6,000 injured across Egypt. On January 28th at 6 p.m., after the prisons had opened, releasing murderers and rapists onto the street, all security withdrew from the streets of Alexandria. Roving gangs of looters took to the street to take advantage of the chaos. In Egypt's port city, the violence and looting devastated government buildings. Where offices once stood, only burned-out rubble remained. Protesters went from building to building, pulling down the symbols of corrupt power. Some looters and protesters then began to eye the Library of Alexandria. President Mubarak, the focus of the uprising, had opened the modern library in 2002 at a cost of about $220 million. According to the library's website, Mubarak built it to, quote, recapture the spirit of openness and scholarship of the original, unquote, the famous ancient library of Alexandria, one of the wonders of the ancient world. As it became apparent that the library might be in danger, protesters joined hands and surrounded the Library of Alexandria. Their goal was not to attack it or raid it, but to protect it. Throughout the protests and looting, the protesters, women, men, and children, stood firm and protected the library. In essence, they were retaking the library for the people. After the uprising had subsided, when President Mubarak had stepped down and the protesters were celebrating their victory around the country, not a window of the library had been broken, not a rock thrown against its walls. Why, in the midst of tearing down the regime, did people of the nation protect the library? Why? Why are stories like this, while maybe not quite so dramatic, repeated across the UK and the United States? As cities faced with a devastating financial crisis sought to close library branches, citizens rallied. Protesters disrupted town halls and city council meetings. Citizens picketed, and in Philadelphia, the city council went so far as to sue the mayor over closing the libraries. In Kenya, the government is building public libraries throughout the country, in rural and urban areas alike. Where the communities are too remote, they have built book carts, 5,000 books in a wooden cart pulled by donkeys. In the even more remote northern sections of the country, they strap carts and tents to camels. Inside the villages, the carts are opened and the tents are erected to allow parents and children an opportunity to learn. In these villages, camels provide transportation, labor, milk, and meat. Even their dung is dried to power stoves. Now this essential animal is seen as providing another critical service, bringing knowledge to the people. In the countryside along the coast of Colombia, Luis Serrano urges along his two donkeys, Alpha and Beto. On the back of the donkeys are crates of books. Louis, a primary school teacher by trade, carries a sign reading Biblioburo. He is bringing books to small villages and spreading literacy throughout the countryside to children who have seen too much violence and conflict for their years. He began with 70 books. Through donations, he has grown the collection to over 4,800 volumes, far past the capacity of his four-legged friends. He now houses the collection in a half-built room that has become an official satellite to the Santa Maria Community Library, some 180 miles away. We find libraries in the finest castles of Europe and in the midst of the Occupy Wall Street populist protest in the States. Libraries are embraced by the elite and the commoner alike. We find librarianship in jungles and deserts, in schools, corporations, and in government agencies. When we try to discover why, we find that there is power in libraries and steel in librarians. It goes deeper than tradition, buildings, and books. The reason for the protest and protectiveness over libraries is not found in collections of materials or columns in architecture. To find the answer to this riddle, one must look past the buildings and the books to the professionals who, throughout history, have served humanity's highest calling, to learn. Libraries and librarians stood at the center of a growing Egyptian empire in the 3rd century BC and the expansion of mathematics in Arabia in the 14th century. Libraries helped bring Europe out of the Dark Ages and into the Renaissance and helped democracy thrive in a post-colonial United States of America. Now, with the advent of the internet and a new digital age, librarians are once again pointing the way towards a better society, founded in knowledge and giving respect to diverse views. This book is about what libraries and librarians can tell us about creating a brighter future and what kind of libraries and librarians we are going to need to make that future a reality. Today's librarians are using the lessons learned over that nearly 3,000-year history to forge a new librarianship based not on books and artifacts but on knowledge and community. They are taking advantage of the technological leaps of today to empower our communities to improve. The librarians of today are radical, positive change agents in our classroom, boardrooms, and legislative chambers. They built the web before we called it the web. They were crowdsourcing knowledge and searching through mountains of information before Google, before Facebook, and even before indoor plumbing. Today's new librarians are not threatened or made obsolete by the net. They are pushing the net forward and shaping the world around you, often without your notice. The field of librarianship represents an investment of nearly $7 billion in the U.S. and $31 billion worldwide. In an age when traditional institutions are declining, library usage has grown steadily over the past 25 years. Did you know that there are more public libraries than McDonald's restaurants in the U.S., and that Americans go to libraries nearly three times more often than they go to movies? By understanding librarians and libraries, we can understand how to build credibility and trust in a community overwhelmed with change and choices. We can discover how to create an environment to disagree and maintain a civil discourse. Ultimately, by understanding new librarianship, we can even understand something as grand as the role of a citizen in society. Perhaps the biggest why question you can ask, and the one at the center of this book, is why do so many people see librarianship as antiquated, conservative, and less than inspiring? Why is it that while folks love the idea of libraries and librarians, they are quick to limit them to books or children or simply think of them as historical holdovers? The answer is not that these people are wrong, but that they need to expect more. Too many libraries are about books. Too many librarians are reliving history and are stuck in a sort of professional conservatism that favors what they do over why they do it. Too many librarians see their collections, not the community, as their jobs. Too many libraries are seeking to survive instead of innovate and promote the love of reading over the empowerment of the populations they serve. I'm not claiming that these librarians are the majority, but they are too numerous and their communities, you, expect too little of them. This book is written not for those librarians, but for the people who either support or oversee libraries. This includes college provosts, students, parents, board members, volunteers, and, well, just about everyone who has ever gone to school or pays local taxes. You need to know what libraries are capable of, and you need to raise the bar on your expectations. Throughout this book, you are going to find examples of amazing libraries and librarians. Today, many in the field would call them exceptional, just as you might call the librarians in Egypt and Kenya exceptional. This is the root of the problem. These libraries may have been in exceptional circumstances, but their dedication to service and their connection to the community should not be seen as exceptions to the norm. They should be the norm to which all libraries aspire. In this book, you are going to read about a public library that has created a fab lab, a space where the community can work on 3D printers and make new inventions. You're going to read about a school library where the librarian is too busy helping teachers raise their performance to shelve books. You're going to read about librarians creating new companies in rural Illinois and transforming lives in Dallas. These are brilliant libraries and librarians. But if you see them as exceptional, as above and beyond the norm, you expect too little of your library. Here is the key to a successful library. You. In a city or a Fortune 500 company, the library must shape itself around you and the goals of your community. If your community strives for greatness, the library should be great. If you are concerned about the future, or the economy, or the future of a democratic discourse in this country, your library should be concerned as well. If you make these expectations known, if you arm yourself with what is possible and not what is, then the library and librarians can meet those expectations and goals. Of course, this is a two-way street. Great libraries expect a lot of their communities as well. Yes, great libraries require financial support, but even more than that, they require open communication about your needs, your challenges, and your dreams. This book will not be a love letter to libraries. I'm not trying to turn you into a librarian. Instead, this is meant to begin an honest and realistic dialogue about the place of libraries and librarians in your community. Join me now as we explore the true potential of libraries and librarians.
And stay tuned in 2 weeks for the next episode of Circulating Ideas and the next chapter of Expect More. If you'd like to learn more about the show or listen to past episodes, you can visit circulatingideas.com or follow us on Twitter at @CircIdeas. We're also on Tumblr at circulatingideas.tumblr.com, or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/circulatingideas. If you have comments, questions, or suggestions for future interviews, you can drop us a line at mail@circulatingideas.com. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thank you for listening, and keep circulating the ideas.
I now, whenever you tweet out about, I have all these great things recorded, I just have to edit them. It's like, oh, come on. Now it's like, oh my God.